Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by a man you may have heard of. It's not Denny Carter. It is Matthew Berry. We're so thrilled to have him, not just at NBC and Roto-World, but on today's show. You also see him on the Roto-World Draft Guide special coming up immediately after this. Matthew, as someone who's been in the spotlight for literally decades now, you're used to commotion, you're used to hubbub, used to hoopla. But, man, I would have to assume the past couple of weeks have had to rank right up there. Just take us through, like, what this has been like, you know, the transition coming back to NBC. What a couple of weeks it's been.
It's been overwhelming. It was unexpected. It happened suddenly. I had been talking with ESPN potentially about an extension. We weren't able to come to an agreement. Nothing bad to say about my time there, but – you know, it became clear that it was time to sort of move on. And you know, I thanked them for their offer, but, you know, politely said, you know what, I think it's time. And so we parted friends. As I said to a lot of people internally there, hey, I'm leaving with hugs and handshakes. And so it was great. Then they were great to me, right? I mean, they gave me last show, and the release they said about me was very nice as well. So very amicable parting of the ways between myself and ESPN. And then you put it out there, and you're not sure, will anyone care? Like, what's, you know, like,
they cared.
I don't know what the reaction is. And as I said to my wife, I said, wow, this was very cool to be trending on Twitter and not be dead.
That was, you not be horribly wrong about something,
right?
Like,
or not be canceled. Right. Yeah, that's exactly. The other thing is that I haven't done something, you know, unspeakably awful. And so, yeah, I mean, I released it. And then honestly, the reaction from the community, from my fans, from ESPN fans, from the fantasy world, like, I couldn't have written it better myself. Unbelievably, overwhelmingly positive and thoughtful and kind and sweet. And I've never experienced that. My phone blew up in a way that I never thought. I mean, I still have about 50 texts that I haven't responded to. Like, seriously, every night I try to get to, like, 10 to 12 texts. Like, and I'm like, I'm not just like, thanks. Like, I'm giving a thoughtful reply to everyone, but, like, you know, between DMs and tweets and Instagram posts and texts, it's just been overwhelming. And then, so that was crazy and nerve-wracking and scary because I'd been there for 15 years. But then, you know, the opportunity to come home to Roto-World, there were a couple of things that were really important to me. Number one is that I wanted to bring Roto-World back. It's a place where I started. It's a brand that I believe in, that I care about. And as I started having conversations with the NBC brass, I said, we should bring Roto-World back. People in the fantasy community love the brand Roto-World. There's been so many great analysts that have come through the halls of Roto-World. And that was awesome that they were amenable to that. So Roto-World's back, and it's coming back in a big way, and it's going to be back even bigger as we continue to go through this football season in 2023. And then the other thing that was important to me, Pat, you know, I always try to push the ball forward, to use another analogy, right? I always try to push the ball forward for the fantasy community in the industry. And
you've done an amazing job of that.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. But what it's certainly something that I, and, you know, intentional, and I think a lot about. And one thing that I thought that still hadn't happened yet, and I thought I had an opportunity here, kind of a moment in time to try to push the ball forward here, is we haven't had anyone that does fantasy analysis on a regular basis on an NFL pregame show that's part of, you know, there's six NFL partners, right? It's us, CBS, Fox, Amazon, and ESPN. And there just is not a fantasy, an NFL network, I suppose, right? And so there's just hasn't been anyone part of NFL coverage. You're on an NFL pregame show. Literally, you're going to see fantasy, and then you're going to actually see in a game. And so when NBC offered me the opportunity to join the cast of Football Night in America, not only you know, part of NFL coverage, but literally the NFL coverage, right? Yes. The number one studio show in all of America, the second highest rated show in all of television, second only to the actual game.
No pressure.
No brainer. Yeah, I mean, tons of pressure. I mean, I was nervous for the first time in 15 years, you know, when I did the Hall of Fame game with Chris Sims. You know, thrilled to be here. Legit doing backflips.
Yeah, you talk about like text threads blowing up. When you were on, you know, NBC, like the real NBC holding up our magazine, I had several text threads blown up. Like, there's the magazine on NBC. Like you said, NBC has been very supportive of fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
But no one had ever yet gotten to that level. Like, no, we haven't had anyone on a show. So we have never had someone quite literally holding up our magazine. It's just an amazing moment. It's just the first of many moments. And yeah, it was funny. You're talking about moving on from ESPN. Like you said, so many great people you worked with at ESPN. I mean, I'm friends with Mike Clay and Field Yates. I'm sure the whole team's amazing, such an amazing group of people, still a great group of people. But you said, you know, it's time to move on. You get to move. It's not many people get to move on to Sunday Night Football.
No, that was the thing, is I felt like people saw me leaving ESPN and were probably like, why is he leaving? Wait, did he get pushed out? Like, is he a moron? Why would he do that? And, you know, and so I think once people saw the NBC thing, they were kind of like, oh, okay. Now
that's why.
Now I get it. Now it makes sense. So I was definitely happy with that as well.
So Matt, you referenced, you know, your RotoWorld, your NBC history. I think a lot of people in the industry kind of knew the legend that RotoWorld was one of your first stops, but probably way more people out there in the audience who didn't know that. You know, I knew that, but I didn't like really like know the story. Like I still don't. And you just take us through your history with RotoWorld. Am I correct that you were hired by Matthew Pouliot?
You are absolutely correct, 100% correct. God bless Matthew Pouliot, FSWA Hall of Famer, a legend in his own right.
True legend. Pouliot.
So very simple story is in 1999.
Man.
Way back, 1999, RotoWorld was advertising for writers. This is back in the day of AOL, CompuServe, when, you know, like you've got mail.
Yeah, and that's pre-NBC RotoWorld, by the way.
Pre-NBC RotoWorld, it was, you had to dial up, you had to literally dial up to get into the internet and like, you know, all that. I'm dating myself here, but.
No, I quite literally just found some of those discs I moved in the past 18 months and somehow found some AOL discs, literally no idea how.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about, Pat, and then, you know, so they were advertising for writers and, you know, again, this is back in the day when the internet wasn't prevalent like it is now. And you've got mail. Like it was a novel thing. Like, ooh, I've got an email. This is cool.
It's the most amazing thing in the world.
Right. It was.
As opposed to now.
Now where you're just sort of like, you know, like another one. Anyway, I emailed them. This is a part of, I usually tell this story, but this is a part of the story that I don't tell, but I will tell it specifically here. So I emailed whatever jobs@rotoworld.com or whatever the email address was. No response. Email again. No response. Email a third time. And I'm like, hey, can you just reject me so I know somebody actually read this? Because what I had said is like, look, I'm a professional writer living out here in Hollywood. I write for TV and movies. And I write for TV and movies. So I think I'm a pretty good writer. But I love fantasy sports. It is my passion. I'm in, you know, whatever, 8 billion leagues. And I think it'd be so much fun. I saw that you're looking for writers. I think it'd be so much fun just to do a column on the side. Could I send you a sample? Could I try out? Could I send you something and see what you think? No response, no response. Third email, like literally, please just tell me you're not interested. Just so I know something's, again, no. But I read Matthew Pouliot every week. Matthew did a ton of work. And back in the day, Matthew Pouliot was RotoWorld. I mean, it might as well have been MatthewPulio.com. Like every post of every player was Matthew Pulio. And so I read him enough that he actually had his own email address at the bottom of his columns, like a Hotmail address.
He still has that.
I believe it, knowing him. And so anyway, I email the Hotmail email address, and I say, I'm saying like, hey man, like, you know, this is who I am. Like, I need some advice. Like, no one's been answering me on this other email. Do you know anyone internally there? Not realizing that Matthew Pulio also ran the site in addition to writing everything on it. Like, literally, it was a one-man band. And he wrote me back and he said, listen, that inbox got so overwhelmed with applicants that I just haven't had a chance to go through and sift through it. He goes, but I looked you up on IMDb.
Humble. That's a flex, by the way. I don't write IMDb.
Yeah. So he goes, I looked you up on IMDb. Married with Children is my favorite show of all time. You're hired. So because Matthew Pulio liked Married with Children, I got a chance to write for a free internet, low traffic internet site. I got to, you know, like, I didn't get any. They're like, there's no money, but, you know, knock yourself out if you want to throw up a column and we'll see if you're any good. And anyway, so the rest is history. So I am forever indebted to Matthew Pulio. And by the way, you know, my style, Pat, as you know, as anyone that's read me knows, it's still controversial, I think, but especially back in the day, really controversial, because I was writing all about myself. I was writing these long, you know, very egocentric, self-centric intros about myself, a lot of pop culture references. Definitely tried to push the envelope in my younger days in terms of, you know, jokes about dating or sex and pop culture. And the people that owned Roto World did not like me. They wanted to get rid of me. They did not like me. They wanted to get rid of me. But Matthew Pulio and Rick Wolf fought for me. Shout out to both of those gentlemen and Rick Cordella as well, who started at Roto World with me. Shout out to all three of those gentlemen who believed in me and fought for me and kept me around. And I was here at Roto World for 4.5 years. And just the end of that is in 2004, I'd been writing for 4.5 years, close to 5, with Roto World, and people were starting to make money on the internet. Blogs were starting to take off, and there hadn't really been a blog in the fantasy space. But I thought, well, maybe I could, I developed a pretty good following at that point, and I felt like maybe I could make some extra money on the side if I went out and started my own site. And so I talked with Roto World about it, and they agreed to let me. I mean, you know, they weren't paying me very much. They didn't have a choice. But
didn't have much left for you.
but it was amicable. And basically, I kept writing for Roto World, but they linked to my new Talented Mr. Roto site from Roto World. And I built up a whole, you know, ecosystem there and that site, and, you know, hired a bunch of people that if you follow Fantasy Analysis, a lot of familiar names came through that site. And so I was with Roto World. You know, in some way, Roto World was running the Talented Mr. Roto stuff, linking back to my site, until 2007, when I ended up selling the website to ESPN.
Man, there's a lot of crazy Roto World origin stories, but literally wrote for Married with Children is probably the craziest. And but right. I guess I was not allowed to watch Married with Children, even though my dad watched it every week. So I don't know which episode you wrote, because I was not allowed to watch it. But Fox was very edgy in those days. I did get to watch The Simpsons. I somehow got my parents to allow me to watch The Simpsons.
Yeah, I worked on 28 episodes of the show. I personally wrote 5 of them. And, you know, I wrote the ones where Al was mean to his wife.
So wasn't that every episode, though?
There you go. That's the joke, right? Right. You know,
he did not seem like a winning husband. I can't remember if he got redeemed ever, did he?
He didn't really ever get redeemed. The thing about Al was, and I think the reason that the show was so popular is that, no, Al was not a good husband, but Al was actually a good guy. You know, it was sort of like, I think he was very relatable in that, because while Al was not a good guy, was not a good husband or a good person, no one on the show was. None of them were.
That's true.
I mean, you know, Al was a complainer and you know, didn't give any emotion or love to Peg, his wife, who was lazy and a shrew. And, you know, the daughter, Kelly, was promiscuous. And Bud was weird. And, you know.
Bud was Bud.
Bud was Bud. And anyway, so like the show had almost no redeemable characters, with the possible exception of Marcy, who was made to be the villain because she was actually a good person.
She was the only good person.
Right. So anyway, a wonderful show, really, really fun, and a brilliant cast.
Yeah, I need to. I'm 35. I need to ask my parents if I can finally watch it.
I think you should. Send them a note.
I think they might say, Matthew Barry says it's time that I can watch.
It is time. Send them an email on their AOL address.
Yes, of course. No, it's sbcglobal.net. Okay, come on, Matthew.
Look at that. All right,
they've gotten with the times. And it's time to talk a little football, I suppose. Matthew, we're finally entering the heart of the draft season. You and I'm sure we're getting, you mentioned like everywhere you're getting congratulations texts. You know, this time of year, everyone's asking us about every player via text, via DM. You probably have people like driving in front of your house with a bullhorn, like shouting things that you're in your house's general direction. Everyone wants to know about everybody. But there are always a few players, you know, who kind of rise above, become like the most talked about players this summer, either because they're hyped, either because they're injured, or maybe coming back from injury. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on some of the players, you know, we've been getting the most questions on this summer, and thought it made sense to start with J.K. Dobbins, who I feel like everyone wants to know, can we trust J.K. Dobbins coming off the torn ACL? He was being drafted as a running back too. Seems like a kind of guy who could have running back one upside and an offense we know wants to really recommit to the run, but the Ravens have really slow played his return. He's just cleared for individual drills last week. John Harbaugh just said today that he's, quote, kind of back on track. And what do you say when someone asks you if it's safe to draft J.K. Dobbins and trust him as an RB2?
I say that I don't know that it, I don't want to say that I don't think it's safe. But I also don't mind drafting him as an RB2 because I think, you know, all it takes with any player is one hit. I think there's so much to like about J.K. Dobbins that I think it's potentially worth the risk as long as you understand it's the risk. And the truth is that I prefer him, much prefer him as an RB2 in a scenario where I haven't gone RB, you know, kind of thing. Like where you've gotten a tight end in the first or second rounds, or you've gotten a wide receiver or two. Like I much prefer him as an RB2, like in the late fourth, fifth, than right. You know, like, so not all RB2s are created equal.
Let's maybe you've missed some of the safe RB2s, but you need more upside from your RB2.
Right. So the concerns here for me are a few. Number one is he going to stay healthy? Right. You know, and even if he's quote healthy, i.e. he's not on the physically unable to perform list and he's not starting the year on injured reserve or anything like that, is he healthy enough to get a decent workload, or do they ease him back into it? Does he still have his burst? You know, sometimes it takes time. Now, he got injured early in the season, so he's had a full year to recover. So that's great. And Baltimore's a very well-run organization. So there's a lot of positives there. But out of the 15 games he played in 2020, he had one or fewer receptions in 10 of them. Like, I think people think he's more involved in the passing game than he is. I just don't think – we just haven't seen the Ravens really use running backs in the passing game the way a lot of other teams do. And I don't know if that's an offensive scheme thing, whether it's a choice thing, or whether, honestly, Pat, it's just one of those things that, like, a lot of times when quarterbacks dump the ball off, it's because they're in trouble. And in Baltimore – when the quarterback's in trouble, Lamar Jackson just does six different insane juke moves.
He's got a better backup plan than most quarterbacks do.
Right. So there's a concern there. Having said that, we've seen the upside. Final six games of 2020, right? Weeks 11 on, 17 points per game. He was the 11th best running back in fantasy on a points per game basis. He scored a rushing touchdown in all six games. He got over 12 touches a game. So he didn't even get a full workload. So if he gets, you know, can he get that up to 15 touches a game? Because the problem is yes, they do want to go run heavy, but Gus Edwards is going to be there. Lamar Jackson is going to be there. They added Mike Davis for some depth as well. So I have him as a lower end RB2, just outside my top 20. I probably feel better about him as a flex, but the upside given that offense and his talent, let's just the guy can play.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at on him. How about you?
Yeah, we sound like we're pretty much on the same page. I've kind of like alternated the various spots in the RB 18 to 24 range. I'm kind of now at like 20 and 21. And like you said, like the risk is self-evident. You know, when a guy has been 12 months and they're still, you know, being kind of cagey, and it's weird. It's his third year in the league and he only has 152 career touches. Like, even though we know he's a super talented player, like, you're kind of far along in your career. Like, it's pretty scant resume still, but like you said, it's easy to forget how good he was down the stretch as a rookie in 2020. They were finally committing to him. You know, the Gus Edwards buzz has not been good. He's always been a coaching staff favorite, but his injury situation seems actually worse than J.K. Dobbins's. And you mentioned Mike Davis, but they made an addition in free agency in Mike Davis, and they made an addition in the draft in Tyler Beatty, who I loved at Mizzou. I've seen every game Tyler Beatty played, but I mean, I still viewed those moves really as a vote of confidence in J.K. Dobbins, because they didn't go out and like make a splash signing, invest a day two pick and a running back where, and I think they're being so cagey, but John Harbaugh is always kind of opaque about everything. And he seems mostly on track to me. Like J.K. Dobbins himself, he always literally logging onto Twitter and being like, yeah, I'm 100% healthy. Like, this is crazy. I want to play. And even with the lack of checkdowns in this offense, just we know the Ravens, they can't have a repeat of last year where they're one of like the most pass heavy teams in the league. And I think there's more signs that they're going to fully commit to J.K. Dobbins than we should be worried about him. And just kind of an unusual amount of upside for someone in like that 18 to 24 range.
1,000%, given the offense, given the scheme, the fit, given the talent. Like, I agree with you. If J.K. Dobbins doesn't take off this year, it is one of two reasons. It is because either that the team doesn't want him to have a full workload because of either like coaching philosophy or concerns about, you know, wanting to take it easy on him for a team that obviously has postseason aspirations, or it's just that, he's not healthy, because on just a pure talent basis, he's the best running back on the team. And I don't think it's particularly close.
No, right? It's not even close. No.
Right. And so then it's a matter of, so we know he's got the talent. The truth is, the weird part is that the Ravens are so good at running the ball, and that scheme works so well, especially with Lamar Jackson, that he doesn't need to be good. I mean, you know, I'm going to talk about this. We got the draft show coming up here. I'm going to mention this. Like, did you know that, like, I think from there was like a month there, I think starting in week 11, where Devontae Freeman was like a top 12 running back.
That sounds fake.
Devontae Freeman, who was sitting on his couch a year ago, Pat, who was like out of football. The ghost of Devontae Freeman was literally like a top 12 fantasy running back there for about a month. He was like, there was a couple random guys that were in there that were top 16. So my point is like, they made Devontae Freeman work last year. They can sort of make almost anyone work. Gus Edwards is a plotter. He's fine.
You know, and he's coming off major injuries, coming off a torn ACL himself.
But my point is they made Gus Edwards a thing for a while.
Yeah, too, yeah, right? Yeah.
He's this kind of this plotting north-south guy. And so there's a bit of like, in a weird way, J.K. Dobbins is a victim of his team because they are so good at just literally anyone with a pulse can produce behind the Ravens offensive line and with Lamar Jackson, a quarterback. But yes, we agree that the ceiling on Dobbins is phenomenal.
Yeah. At one point you were kind of hinting at there is that some of these really run heavy teams just philosophically want to run several guys just to kind of keep them fresh, but there's just no one. This is where all the ceiling resides in this backfield. It's J.K. Yeah. Dobbins. And like you said, it's a kind of offense where like, if you're slightly above average back, you can average over 5 yards per carry, even if you're not good. J.K. Dobbins averaged over 6 yards per carry as rookies. Like, the offensive line, the offensive philosophy, like, by itself kind of gets you 4 yards per carry. And there's just, I repeat the same line I just said, but an unusual amount of upside for someone in that RB 18 to 24 range. Someone that I think probably has an unusual amount of upside as a wide receiver, too, is Gabriel Davis. But he's kind of the classic. He could be a guy we're getting out over our skis on, or a guy where we love so many highlight reel plays, but the overall resume is still, you know, it's not complete, basically. There's so much to be in love with, but we're still taking a bit of a leap of faith, treating Gabriel Davis as maybe a wide receiver, too. And everyone wants to know about Gabriel Davis. What is your Gabriel Davis spiel?
So I'm all in on Gabriel Davis. Like, the much bigger question, I think, and you sort of hinted at this as well, Pat, is does he return value? There's no question in my mind that if Gabriel Davis is healthy, he's going to have a good year. will he have a year that's a top 23 wide receiver year, which I think is where he's going on Yahoo right now, is like wide receiver 22, 23, something like that. So that's a pretty high price, to your point, a guy that doesn't have a lot on his resume other than one insane playoff game that everyone in the world watched. Having said that, I'm a believer. I'm all in. So I did my 100 facts column. So just a shout out. If you haven't read it yet, please do. 100 facts you need to know before you draft, which is on NBCSportsEdge.com and RotoWorld.com right now. But here's what I would say. And this is part of what I put in that column. 186 targets. Manuel Sanders and Cole Beasley.
Man.
A 33% target share last year. 186 targets are now up for grabs. Yes, they signed Jamison Crowder. Yes, we expect a bigger role for Isaiah McKenzie, James Cook in the passing game as well. We expect, you know, not all 186 targets to go to Gabriel Davis, but that's okay. He doesn't need all 186 targets to be really, really productive. Here's what's crazy to me. Last year, Gabriel Davis was 98th in targets among wide receivers. Like, there were almost 100 players who got more targets than Gabriel Davis. There were 11 different games last year in which he ran 20 or less routes. So the majority of the games last year, Gabriel Davis just wasn't on the field. And yet, despite being 98th in targets, despite all those games where he ran so few routes, he was still top five in the NFL in end zone targets among wide receivers. Think about that.
That's right? Insane. I mean, like,
got, with all the weapons they had and how little he was on the field, he still managed to get enough end zone targets that he was top five among wide receivers. And now Sanders, Beasley, all these guys are gone. You have Dawson Knox back. Okay, fine. But there's a reason why he targets Gabriel Davis so much in the red zone, because he's a big physical threat. He's a guy that can win 50-50 balls and contested catches, because Stephon Diggs is always going to draw double coverage here. And so Gabriel Davis, who had multiple end zone targets in four of his last five final games, to me is a guy that, I don't know, we talked about this. You want guys playing with good quarterbacks and good offenses. Gabriel Davis is just 23 years old. I will tell you that I've spoken to a number of the coaching staff of the Buffalo Bills, and this was last year. This is a time ago this year. And they were all telling me, like, we think we got something in Gabe Davis. We think we found something here. Like, they've been excited about him for quite some time. So this does feel like one where the hype might actually justify the product. The production might actually justify the hype, is the way I would say it.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally as an industry, hype, we almost always overdo it. Sometimes we just do it right. And I agree with Gabriel Davis. It's justified. You know, I read fantasy football facts all day, quite literally. And I would have never guessed the amount of targets left behind by Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley was 186. So go read Matthew Berry's 100 facts you need to know before the season, because I'm reading all day and somehow missed that. And yeah, just my quick spiel is Gabriel Davis is just, when given the chance, he's always succeeded. He forces his way on the field as a fourth round rookie, which does not happen for receivers very often. For whatever reason, they don't commit to him last year for a while. When they finally swap out Emmanuel Sanders for Gabriel Davis, he immediately kind of goes nuts, has one of the greatest playoff games of all time. And we had the Athletic's Joe Biscaglia on the podcast a few weeks ago. He said, like, Josh Allen and Gabriel Davis are kind of developing like one of those mind melds when, like, Josh Allen like needs someone to like freelance. It's like Gabriel Davis who's willing to freelance and get open. And it just seems like the stars are aligning for Gabriel Davis.
Again, he had five games last year, only five games, to your point, Pat. He had five games last year, only five games where he saw five or more targets.
It doesn't seem possible. I mean, the Bills got a good staff. I don't know if that's good coaching.
I'm not even done with the stat. Five games last year, just five games where he had five or more targets. He scored in four of them.
Man.
I mean, they're just saying, again, he was top five in end zone targets despite being 98th overall in targets among wide receivers. Like, Josh Allen looks for this guy in close. Do we think Josh Allen is going to throw a bunch of touchdown passes this year? We do. Who's he going to throw them to? I think a lot of them are going to go to Gabe Davis, who's going to be on the field a lot more. Especially, by the way, I'm not convinced Josh Allen runs as much this year, at least in close, as he has previously. You know, he's been a guy that, like, previously they've been like, yeah, we'll roll him out there. He'll jump through the line. He'll jump over piles. Like, he doesn't care. And now it's a little bit like, oh, listen, franchise, you know, calm down here. Why don't you just, so, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're both all in on Gabe Davis. We're not the only people all in on Gabe Davis, but that's just because occasionally something's undeniable. I think Gabriel Davis is undeniable, and maybe, I don't know, like, so maybe he'll still finish as like a low end wide receiver too. So maybe it won't, by the letter of the law, return value. I just see no way Gabriel Davis is not like a high impact fantasy player this season. And we'll be right back after this.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
The NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Football Draft Guide is now available. Prep for your draft with the latest player rankings, projections, and more. We've got you covered for all league formats and draft strategies. It's powered by RotoWorld, the premier source for player news and fantasy information. And for a limited time, use promo code DRAFT1 to get access for just $1. Matthew, you know, we said we were going to talk about Trey Lance, but as most people do, we got a little too excited about Gabriel Davis. So we're going to have to bag the Trey Lance talk, but that's because we've got
– I'm in on Trey Lance. That's all you need to know. Two starts last year, almost 17 fantasy points per game. I'm in on Trey Lance as a sleeper.
Bingo. And just don't overthink a quarterback in the Shanny system. So another thing, or even if he's not good, he's going to be good in fantasy. And it's difficult to – just don't overthink Trey Lance. But, Matthew, you know, what can we look forward to on the Roto-World Draft Guide special? I know so much great content coming up. Just what can the people look forward to?
Yeah, so Michael Smith and I are going to do it, and we're going to welcome in a lot of our experts. So Peter King has been traveling around to all the training camps. He's got a bunch of great inside scoops for you. Same with Mike Florio, who's been talking to a lot of his sources. He's got some stuff. Chris Sims is going to come by, break down some X's and O's for us. We've got Mike Ryan, who was a head trainer of the Jacksonville Jaguars for 20 years. He's going to help us out with some injury issues. But it's me and Michael talking fantasy for quite some time, taking you through all the positions, draft strategy, everything you need to know to dominate your draft.
And you will dominate your draft. Michael Smith, by the way, knows his fantasy. Like, you and Michael are going to do great together.
He's won the War Room League twice, the famed, prestigious ESPN War Room League twice. I've competed against him, traded with him multiple times for years and years and years when we were both at ESPN. He is a hardcore, passionate, insanely smart fantasy football manager, no question.
Yeah, I'm ashamed to admit I had no idea what a fantasy junkie he was, and apparently on the zero RB bandwagon. Michael is a sophisticated fantasy guy, excellent fantasy guy. The Roto-World Draft Guide show with Matthew Berry. Check it out on the NFL and NBC YouTube page and Peacock. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. We are so happy you're here, and just so much great content. Thanks for joining us.
Roto Pat, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and thrilled to be a part of the team. Thanks for the kind welcome.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing year. So for Matt, I'm Pat. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a realtor can help answer. Because realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.